Welcome back to Silk Flowers and
Papier-Mâché Hearts. We are your hosts, Eric Hart
and Ashley Flowers. Today we are sitting down with Marianne Nedreberg.
Yes.
Hello.
That's right.
She is the prop director at Center Theater Group in LA.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you so much for sitting down with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Of course.
Cool. So you've been the prop director at Center Theater Group. You just got that job this year, right?
Yes. Just got promoted.
Awesome. But you were the associate prop manager since 2008?
No. So I've worked for Center Theater Group since 2008, and I've done all the prop jobs.
Uh-huh.
But I became the associate in 2012.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think. Yeah. So, and before that I was my title was prop lead, which was, I prop mastered shows. I switched off prop mastering shows. And then before that I was over hire and prop mastered shows. And then, I was like a shopper and an artisan and tech coverage and all the things.
And I feel like I was looking back at a bunch of the shows Center Theater Group have done, because they send a lot of them to New York and some of them to the public that I've worked on. I was wondering, did you do Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson when it was there?
That was just before I came on.
Okay.
That was literally the show before I started.
Okay. And then In the Wake by Lisa Crone?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, cool.
Oh, yes.
I think I remember from that show there was like there's pictures hanging up as part of the set dressing, and some of them were of the Center Theater Group props people
in the kitchen on the
yeah.
fridge.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just gotta have fun with your job, right? I hide a picture of my dog anytime they're like, "I need a dog." I'm like, "Oh, I have a great dog." So I've put many a pictures of my dog on set.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what are you going to do? Put somebody else's dog on set? No.
No. My dog's cute.
I need the best dog. Of course, I'm going to use mine.
He's so photogenic.
So have you always done props, or how did you get into that world?
Well, I've always, I've done theater forever, since I was little. I grew up in a small town in Utah, and I actually grew up Mormon, and part of that is that they really encourage talent. Mm-hmm. You do a lot of things that encourage talent. So I was never afraid to like get up in front of everybody and do the operettas or the spring sings or whatever. So when I got a little bit older, about 10 or so, my mom started getting me into some shows that my aunt would help out with or other. I think I was an extra on some films. I just did some acting work, and I thought I really enjoyed it. But at the same time, I would get bored a lot as a kid. And so my mom was always like, "What's a new talent you can learn?" And so we would learn, you know, crocheting or painting or sculpting or drawing or whatever, never thinking that it would apply to my, you know, career as a theater person. But it was always something, you know, like I was going to be a fashion designer, so I learned how to draw clothes or whatever. And little did she know, she was fostering a prop person. but when I, my senior year in high school, I was like, "Oh yeah, I got to pick something for college." And so I was like, "Well, I'll just be an actor. I really like doing that. And that's what I'll do." And everybody was like, "You can do it." Cause when you're in a small town and you're the most outgoing person, everybody believes that you're by far the best actor they've ever seen in their life. And which is, was not true. I just was outgoing and wasn't afraid to play the part, make a fool of myself. And then I got to college. I went to Southern Utah University and went in for an audition. And I was just like, "What audition?" I never had to do that really before in my life. I was always just like handed things and was like, "I don't really like this. I don't like to, you know, sell myself," I guess. And the other kids that were in the acting program, I wasn't, you know, they were all very nice people, but I could tell that they weren't quite my people.
Yeah.
And then at the time I was taking a stagecraft course, and the TD who was named Zach Stevenson, he now teaches at North Carolina School of the Arts.
He
was
where
like,
I teach.
Yeah. Yeah. He was like, "Huh, well, you've got some, you know, skills here, and just kind of, I was in costumes and I was in stagecraft, and I did all the classes, because when I came into undergrad, I was already 2 years ahead, because I growing up in a small town, there's not much to do. So I had gotten my associates while I was in high school. Oh, wow. So I came in as a junior. And so that first semester I had to catch up on all the theater courses. So I was in all of them, and I was just trying to find my place. And I was like, maybe it's costumes, maybe it's makeup, maybe it's stagecraft, maybe it's, you know, something. I was a light board operator. I was on the costume room crew. All these things kind of wandering around. And Zach kind of picked up that I was like bouncing around, mm-hmm. and introduced me to his wife, Tina, mm-hmm. who was one of the prop masters at Utah Shakes, yeah. and was like, well, you should apply for the prop internship. And I was like, oh, okay, that sounds like a job for the summer. So great, I'll do that. Yeah. And didn't know that I was super into props or anything. So I applied for that internship, and then that's it. I was the prop person. I just really found myself. I guess.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah. Yeah. Tina works down here now. I've worked on a couple shows with her down here too. She's really great. And she has also worked with your, you just hired a new associate props manager, Kate. She's worked with Tina as well.
Kate has, because she also worked at the Public. World. She's kind of like, around a little bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, small theater world.
I know,
Everyone knows everyone.
It's like, it's that obvious Utah, North Carolina, LA link.
Duh.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Cool.
So then I worked at Utah Shakes for like 4 seasons, kind mm-hmm. of going from intern to junior artisan to artisan. Mm-hmm. And then I decided I was going to go to grad school for props, which I don't know why people do that. It's like an obsolete degree, you know, but mm-hmm. I just felt like I wanted the MFA mm-hmm. in case I wanted to teach. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I love doing this, and why not get some more experience? And I actually applied to NCSA and CalArts and went and interviewed. And when I went to NCSA, it was cold and friendly to me. And I was like, okay. And then I went to CalArts and it was like sunny, and everybody was like, hey, welcome. And so I was like, well, I guess I got to go to CalArts because it's sunny.
Right, yeah.
So I went to CalArts, got my master's degree, and I did, you know, a lot of things between, was an assistant prop master for a summer at the Old Globe. I did many things around town. And then the summer between my second and third year, Don Holiski, who was the prop director at the time, mm-hmm. Hired me on to overhire for the summer, and then kept me on ever since. When I was in school, she likes to say I was an intern, and I guess technically I was, in order to be released from school a couple days, but I wasn't doing like, I was like getting paid, and I was not doing intern work. I was doing full artisan or shopping or sitting in tech work. And then I graduated in 2009 and in May, and the recession had really hit theaters, especially mm-hmm. Center Theater Group, and they Don was like, I can't hire you right now. And I was like, okay, which worked out because I had really bad tendonitis in my foot and couldn't walk. So it worked out that I, for a couple months, just took it easy and did a bunch of smaller things, worked for some smaller theaters around here, did Spike Guide Choice Awards and things like that. And then in August, she was like, I need a prop master. Can you come prop master? And so the first show I ever prop mastered was actually Eclipsed at the Douglas, where it world premiered.
Oh, mm-hmm. Nice. Awesome.
So, and then I've been doing it ever since.
Ever since. Mastered
media show. I'm stuck with it.
Yeah. I'm interested in the experience at CalArts, because that was one of the schools I looked at, and it was dramatically different from like every other graduate program, because they're all like super theater based, real traditional kind of stuff. And then you go to CalArts and they're like, we do art and we're connected with Disney and there's all this weird technology and you're kind of not really doing theater all the time.
Yeah, you're doing a lot. You're doing theater. Mm-hmm. Kind of. I mean, you know, in the sense that there's a stage and there's people that come and watch it and there's actors and elements. But I think that the thing that attracted me to CalArts was that program really teaches you to like think on your feet because you're not doing traditional theater. So I, you know, yeah, sometimes I was building and reupholstering a beautiful settee. And then sometimes I was trying to figure out, you know, how we were one show, my friend actually prop mastered, but we had to make a mango that glowed that broke apart. So, you know, it was like figuring out things that were not normal, which I think inevitably in the end, even though now I do pretty traditional theater, I am really capable of just being like, oh, on the fly, sure, let's do this. You know,
right,
anytime they throw something that's like, this might be weird, I'm like, it's not. LRs, it's not. So.
What's the mix of like learning about management versus learning how to build props there?
I think that you have your work study. You have courses that they teach on in building, but the majority of your courses are management courses. So, and like some other, like I took a structural engineering course that they required me to take that was like, with the technical directors, and the whole time I was like, why am I taking this course? I'm a prop master. What am I structurally engineering a bench? You know, and so the teacher who is a real life structural engineer who like does bridges, you know, like real life things, was like, you're right. And so he would try to always like tie it into like props. And every time he's like, you're right. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Is there math involved with that?
Oh,
that doesn't sound like props.
Yeah, I was like, so what you're telling me is that if I build the bench out of metal or I build the bench out of wood, it won't really matter because it's a bench.
Yeah, yeah, props is like you build it first.
The simple strength is the same.
Yeah. Build it first and then jump on it. And then...
Yeah, like, it was... So, it was fun, but... a lot more management courses, and you're kind of set off. I mean, there's mentorship and there's kind of a curriculum.
Yeah.
But at CalArts, it's really about like how much you want to invest in your education, you know? So, if you really want to stay active and learn a lot and do lots of things, you can do that. So I did that because I'm an overachiever. And so my second year there, I did, I touched every single show. I prop mastered a couple of semester. I was a puppet creator because I didn't puppeteer. I just helped make the puppets. I worked on some films. I just, as I was constantly busy, never sleeping. But then I had another person in my program who just did their assignments. And that was kind of the barely, right, like we were kind of covering for him. It was, that was the level. So it kind of is like, you put in what you need to put in and everybody graduates in the end.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you needed to learn something, if you needed to, you know, we had all the stagecraft and welding and all those courses, but if you really needed to do something for a class, to create something for a show, I should say, the professors would get in, would like, okay, let's think about this. And we'd all like research it and figure it out and learn a new skill. And like, people were always interested in what you were doing when you were creating things. And so it was very like team environment that way. And everybody kind of learning, even if it was in your work study versus in a classroom setting.
Right. Yeah.
And then jumping to Center Theater Group, how is that structured staff wise in comparison to other theaters that you've been at?
I think it's probably pretty similar to most theaters. We have, you know, artistic director, the general manager, you know, producing managers, executive, you know, all those are up there at the top. I think that we have some of our larger departments are definitely like institutional advancements, which is the getting fundraising department. We have a very large education. We do a lot of education outreach.
Oh, that's awesome.
Our education department is really huge. And then there's every year for our Christmas party, they do a bingo thing and you have to go get somebody to sign from different departments. And so like for box office, for example, you would think that that is just one, but there's like box offices and there's audience services and there's priority services. And there's lots of departments. We probably have a little over 200 people that work for us. And then as far as like our theaters go, we have three theaters. We have the Amundsen Theater, which is our largest space. It is primarily a roadhouse. Tours come in it's a union space. So they have a union prop head, stagehand, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We occasionally produce there. Depends on the year, depends on what tours, because we can't get the typical like Nederlander tours. So we're not getting like Hamilton or anything like that in there. We're getting some of the other things. So we got like this year, we got Dear Evan Hansen, which did very well for us. But so we get some of the off tours, which is hit and miss. Sometimes they're really good and everybody's really excited about them. And then sometimes you just like when Hamilton was touring, you just couldn't compete at all.
Right. Yeah. Now, are you union?
No.
So how is it like working with a union house with not being union? What are there huge restrictions in that, or does that cause problems? Or?
Yeah, so we actually have two union houses and one non-union. So our taper space, which is our middle space that seats a little over 700, is also a union space. And then our mm-hmm. Douglas space, which is the smallest, to Kirk Douglas space, is seats 300, a little over 300. And they're non-union. So when we work at the Douglas, I am allowed to touch everything, do everything. I do the notes. I run around like a crazy person. And that's kind of, you know, typical, right? Like what, how everybody does it, right?
Yeah.
But with the union houses, we are still allowed to build the prop shop and the costume shop are still allowed to build things. It's part of our contract. Scenery for the union houses has to be built by a union scene shop.
Mm-hmm.
The Kirk Douglas, it does not. We still prop the shows, make everything, build everything. But the minute it comes over to the theater, we are no longer physically doing the notes. I'm just facilitating that the notes are getting done.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of, I liked, like when I'm at the theater, I'm kind of more of a go-between.
Okay.
Right.
So like I talk to the designer and then I talk to the prop head or, you know, talk to my shopper and then talk to the, you know, like I'm kind of the person that goes between and I just make sure that everything gets done without touching anything.
And are they still working under your budget or do they have like, are they buying their own supplies? Are they taking care of things?
Their labor is not under my budget
because
that's not possible.
Yeah.
But the if they need something that is show specific, that will fall under my budget.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Hmm. Interesting.
If they need something that's facility specific, then they have a budget for that that's separate from us. But when they're like, we need hot glue, we buy them hot glue.
Right. Yeah. Cool. So what's it like in Los Angeles, a city that's totally geared towards film? What's it like doing theater there? Is there a theater scene? Is it different from other cities?
Yeah. I mean, I actually think that LA has a huge theater scene.
Yeah.
I'm not the only one that thinks this. If you live in LA, we do have a very large theater scene. There's tons of theater here. Big theater like us, we are the biggest theater here in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. But then we have people that other theaters that we somewhat compete with, like the Geffen or the Pantages. Or there's a new one, the Wallace Annenberg Theater and Pasadena Playhouse. So those are kind of the four biggest ones. South Coast Rep is a little bit smaller, but still around. And then there's just a ton of like 99 seat theater everywhere. They do fringe festivals here, the Hollywood Fringe Festival. They do all kinds of, there's the LGBTQ Center that does a bunch of theater.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of theater, lots of people doing theater. But we are a film town, but with that comes a lot of accessibility.
Yeah.
So prop mastering in LA versus prop mastering, like when I was working, you know, even at the Old Globe or Utah Shakes, your shop is building a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You have to build a lot of stuff because you don't necessarily have access to all the things. Like for Utah Shakes in Cedar City, it's like they have a Walmart and they have like a Home Depot and they have some smaller stores and they can drive aways to St. George where they might have a Target, you know, and a couple Home Goods stores. But it's not like here where there's literally a store that just sells springs. So if you need to make a trick knife, you just go to the store that sells springs, right?
Like,
or you just go to one of the prop houses and you're like, hey, we need a trick knife and they'll make it for you. So prop mastering here, whenever there's something that we can build, we do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like to build. I like my team to build. That's something that especially when I prop mastered, I made those decisions. And that now that I'm the prop director, that's the way we're moving forward. Anytime we can build something, we're going to build it, because that's how we keep people in our shop. That's how we keep the talented people that we want to keep, you know, but we can also, you know, find anything anywhere. So we do a lot of shopping. The rental houses, some of the smaller theaters, they're like, oh, you're a theater, you can't really afford our stuff. We go in there and we're like, we like to rent this thing. And they're like, oh, we're like, no, we can afford it. It's okay. Yeah. It just sucks. So, but we don't actually rent a lot, because we, if you need it for a 6-week run and then you have 4 weeks of rehearsal, 10 weeks of rental isn't actually necessarily affordable.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that in LA, we're lucky in the sense that if I need a 3-foot switchblade made for Zoot Suit, I can go to a shop and get a 3-foot switchblade made. But at the same time, now there's somebody not building a 3-foot switchblade at my shop, you know?
Yeah. And how large is your shop?
Right now we are a little smaller than we will be in a few months. Right now we have one associate prop master, or prop manager. Hopefully we'll be hiring a second one within the year. Within next year, I should say. And then we're the full-time permanent employees. And then I have a group of overhires that we bring in that are pretty much constant. I have a carpenter or a carpenter slot that we fill as we need to. And then that the person that we have in that spot right now kind of bounces a little bit. So he might do run crew at the Douglas, or he might build on scenery if props doesn't have carpentry needs. And then I have, we call her the assistant prop lead. She assists on most of the shows. And then I have somebody who, his name's Eric Babb, and he, basically does a lot in the shop, like with our, stock, and does rentals, because we rent out to a lot of the smaller theaters. He then helps on shows too, as needed. So he's also an artisan. So we're five, hopefully six. Mid next year.
And do your associate prop masters also prop master shows as needed?
Yeah. So how we have it set up in the prop department is that I don't actually prop master the shows. Okay. I direct the department. I work on all the shows. I'm in tech on all the shows. I'm involved in all the shows, but I'm not the physical prop master. So the associate prop masters, they'll trade off, because we do about... we do five shows at the Taper, and technically we do four shows at the Douglas, but we have this one slot that's called Block Party, and it's actually three shows that were done outside in the 99 site community that we bring onto our Douglas stage. So really we're doing seven shows at the Douglas. They're like four, and we're like seven.
You're like, no.
And then like some years we produce at the Amundsen. So this year we have one show that we're producing at the Amundsen.
Okay.
And so... we'll bounce back and forth. Right now, since I'm an associate down, I will overhire that spot, or like we're coming up on a show that's really small. It's like needs a stool and a fan. So I'll just prop master that show.
Done.
You need no one problem. Of those every year.
I'm like, oh, you need a chair? You want a chair instead of a stool? Sure.
I got you.
So that's kind of how we work.
And do you ever have interns?
So whenever we can, it depends on how busy we are. The education department has specific guidelines for interns. Recently the production department was kind of like, well, your guidelines for the interns don't work out really well for the production department, because you want them to only put in 16 hours a week, and they're undergraduates who sometimes you can't, I mean, one of our problems is that Southern California doesn't have any schools that are really teaching props.
Yeah.
So we don't actually often get people who are interested in doing props. We get people who are interested in doing theater and want to learn, and this is the avenue that they think they're going to learn from. So we were kind of like, we need it to be different. We got to have something that's more, that gives us more flexibility and more hours, and that we can hire somebody who's much more skilled. So we just started this season with an apprentice for the Kirk Douglas. So each two of the shows this year we'll hire an apprentice for, and they get something like 100 hours to work on the show, which works out pretty well, because they can be a big part of like the tech process and help us out with notes and do some stuff on the front end of building and learning. And that was really successful for my department. I think it was successful for production management. I think the TDs had one that they weren't so thrilled about. They thought they were going to be thrilled about. And then they were like, it's fine. But ours was fabulous. But she was training in graphic design, which very much worked out for us on this show. So she did all these posters and books and stuff. We were just like throwing them at her. And she's like, okay.
Perfection. We're like, and there you go. Mm-hmm.
But we do a lot of education outreach with Center Theater Group. We have community outreach. So we'll bring the community into our shop. Our shop right now is in a place called Boyle Heights, which is a primarily Latino portion of the city. And the last 4 years, we've been doing outreach with that, where we'll have like six different classes that they can come in, and we'll split it between costumes and props. And then they have some playwriting ones, and they come into our shop, and I taught them how to, you know, cast their hand, and I taught them how to make lanterns. I taught them how to make puppets. We did little hand puppets for one. You know, you have to kind of keep it fairly simple so that all kinds, because it's like itty bitty kids to old ladies and everybody in between. So we did some furniture painting techniques, and they built little footstools and painted them, you know. So we've done some fun outreach in that way. And then I go and speak at career fairs all the time, or I just went to one where they were doing outreach with the schools, and we're basically like, this is what we're looking for when we hire people from your schools, which was really awesome, but disheartening for me as a prop person, because there's no prop people.
Yeah, you're like, mwah.
There's the people that like prop master and mentor, but there's not kids that want to do it.
Yeah. So.
Do you ever find any like potential overhire from your community outreach workshops? You like pay attention. It's like, oh, we got a furniture painting show coming up, and this person's dynamite.
Not in the prop world. We have found people in the costume world that were like, oh, this girl really can sew.
Oh yeah.
There was there's a family that always comes, and one of the dad, he actually, and the daughter, they're both very good. And so they've been on a list for costumes. In props, it's like, they're not quite, the projects that we're doing are not quite showcasing enough to be like, oh, I mean, we're trying, but it's power tools, you know, Libella.
Yeah. That's such a mix of things too. It's like, great, you could cast a hand. Well, on the show, we're going to be, you know, dropping paper from the grid. So those skills don't transfer. Sorry. So how do you decide which projects you're going to build for the shows? Do you kind of pick and choose based on what you want to do?
I fill in the gaps.
Okay.
Because I want my team to pick and choose what they want to do.
Yeah.
And give them first priority. And then wherever there's a gap, because I can fill in all the gaps, because I'm a jack of all, master of none. So if they need help with carpentry, I go and do carpentry. If they need me to weld something, I weld it. If they need me to sew, I sew. If they need me to paint, I paint. You know, so I just kind of jump in wherever they need it. And help them however they need to help. When I was the associate, when I was prop mastering, I would just pick whatever was needed the highest skill. So if it was a particularly difficult project, then I would take that one on. Or if it was one that probably wasn't fun for other people, I would take that on. Like when we did, I can never remember the name of that show because I try to block it out of my memory.
We all have one of those.
Crap. I can't remember it. Anyways, we did this show and it started with an A, but I can't remember the name. Anyways, there was a photo book and it was lynching photos. And, you know, it's not difficult to go. Well, it's sadly, it's not difficult to go out and find a bunch of photos of lynchings. But I didn't want anybody else to have to do that. So I did that project. You know?
Was that the Brandon Jacobs Jenkins?
Yes, that one.
I saw that at a Humana Festival in Louisville.
Yeah. It was just a tough one for us. We had some.
And like the audience, the audience never sees the photo book, which I think is, I mean, the inside of the photo book, which I think is great. But well, yeah, I can't imagine having to.
And then you have a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have a kid that has to look at the photo book and it has to be similar enough photos. And our kid that was the stage manager's son. And so they were particularly like intense about it. And so I just was like finding pictures of trees and, you know, things that like kind of looked like the background, right, but didn't have that in it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
This project.
Oh my.
Well, and also like when we did Soft Power last year at the Amundsen, it was a huge show and the prop department really took on a lot of projects in order to kind of help out with the scenery budget. Mm-hmm. Because it tends to be cheaper for our shop to build things than a union shop to build things.
Right.
And there were some super fun projects in there, but I also was like, okay, you like to sculpt. I'm going to let you sculpt the giant cheeseburger and I'll just kind of direct it, you know?
That's awesome.
That's kind of also, I think that that's probably one of my strengths, is that I'm pretty good at directing people and getting them. Mm-hmm. I'm a, you know, we took that management course. I'm a driver.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
I'm a big time driver. I was born driving, you know.
Yeah, we were all in different areas,
they're like,
on that.
Yes, you are. When I told my parents, they were like, we know, Mary. You know.
Everybody in the room knows.
So everybody knows as you're leading them all.
Come on, drivers, so over I'm, here. All the drivers, get over here.
So I'm pretty good at helping get them where they want, where they need to be. Sometimes they might not like when I'm like, you know, that's not perfect. You should try that again. But I think in the end, they're like, thank you for doing that because it looks awesome. You know, I'm
right.
Like, no problem. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're like, you want it to look good.
You want it to look good.
Yeah.
I can't. You... But my project were these crazy chandeliers that were these mannequins that were supposed to look like Ronald McDonald, and they had a chandelier coming out of their head, and that was my crazy project that I worked on. So
mm-hmm.
We welded a frame, and you know, I had the carpenter built the bases, and then I did all the finish work on them. So lots of fiberglass, you know.
My students were asking me what do you do when you're, if you're the manager and your artisans aren't producing work that are up to your standards. It was a interesting discussion to try to figure that out.
You do one of two things. You stay late and fix it, which I don't think is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. Or right, you just kind of push them a little harder. Yeah.
Like, they show up in the morning like, oh, it's not as bad as I thought when I left yesterday.
You're barely awake. I mean, my team, I've been working with them for a few years now. So they... Kate is doing a project right now. And so I warned her, I was like, just so you know, I'm kind of a perfectionist and I expect that from all of you. And I think that, you know, everybody can tell you that there will be moments where you're like, oh, but in the end, you'll appreciate it. So don't, you know, I might come in here and say something and it's not personal. It's not you. It's just that I want the best quality for our things. And
yeah.
So then I came
in for a string
and I was like, that corner needs to be fixed. They're not folded the same way. They're folded in opposite directions. And she's like, what? And then she was like, how did you, I miss that? Because I'm crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that too sometimes when I'm working with a staff and I'll be like, this isn't personal, but maybe this isn't the right color we should be using on this finish. And, and they get very frustrated. But then like looking back and they're like, okay, it does look better. That's fine. It's like, you want it to be as best as you can. Like, I would want somebody to tell me that's wrong. Like, mm-hmm. Let's make it better.
Right. Especially with, like, aging. I think that a lot of times people really, they don't know how to age correctly, right? Mm-hmm. So either they hold back because if they go too far, it looks fake. It looks like bad aging.
Yeah.
Or they're just afraid because they're, you know, I can't take it back. I can't take it back. And you're like, okay, you need to go stand back there and look at it.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't look aged. You need to get it again.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, guys, I think this is all the time that we have today. Thank you for listening in. And thank you so much, Marianne, for sitting in with us. Marianne will be back with us next week and we'll chat some more. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Silk Mache and email us with any questions or ideas for future episodes at propspodcast@gmail.com.
And be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Podcasts and support us at our Patreon, which you could find at our website, silkflowersandpapermachehearts.com. And I think this week we have to thank our first $20 a month supporter, Jay Duckworth. Thank you for supporting the show.
Woo! This has been another episode of Silk Flowers and
Papier-Mâché Hearts with your hosts, Eric Hart
and Ashley Flowers. We'll see you next time.
Bye.